This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 112 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in stormy Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. Boy, you know, we're getting ready to go to the UAS Industry Days Collaboration for Innovation in a little bit over a week from now. It'll be exciting to get to that conference.
It'll be awesome. We're looking forward to it. We got the inside track on. Hopefully we'll get some really good interviews. It looks like it'll be a really positive experience at New Air and the 6th New York test site, the New England test site. So we're looking forward to it. Not to mention, we'll be able to see each other face to face and not using electronic means to do it.
I'd say that could be scary, but we've done that before a couple of times, so I think we'll be all right.
And our producer and editors are going to be there also, and they like getting together and swapping stories about how bad we are.
That's true. That's true. And we should mention the hashtag for this is New Air Days, NUAIRDAYS. So you can follow that on Twitter. It's in upstate New York, September 22nd and 23rd, and this is an event put on by the New Air Alliance and the Empire State Chapter of the AUVSI. So, again, we're looking forward to that. If you're all going to be there, let us know. Send us a note, say hi on Twitter or whatever, and we'll see if we can get to see some of you and have some great conversations.
Yeah, we definitely want to. If you're there and meet up with us, we can chat. We'd love to chat and meet our listeners. We do that with our other show, Airplane Geeks, and it's always a really good time. So we're getting pumped. So it'll be the first show that Max and I are covering for UAV Digest. Normally we do air shows and events for Airplane Geeks, but this is going to be fun talking UAVs all weekend or for at least 2 days. So we'll look forward to that. We'll put some links in the show notes to all the events. And like I said, if you're going to be in the area, give us a shout out. And also, we'll try to meet up with you and say hello and shake your hands. And we got a full show, Max, so I guess we better stop talking about ourselves and start talking about the news, huh?
All right. What are we looking at this episode, David?
Well, we got SB 142 that was vetoed late last night or first thing this morning as we're recording this on Thursday, the 10th of September, by Governor Jerry Brown. We've got a fantastic interview with the president of the National Retail Hobby Stores Association. Brought a little tear to my eye, remembering my old days of managing a hobby shop and old school customer service and getting people to do the right thing before they walk out the door. So that's really good. We've got mass jackassery commented upon.
I love that.
Sorry, but I love that title. We got some more news and some video of the week, and we've got lots of feedback, Max. We got to get through this feedback. We get lots of feedback, and of course, you can always send us feedback. We may complain that there's a lot, but doesn't mean we don't want more. And you can always do that. Send us feedback at feedback@theuavdigest.com. But let's get started with our breaking news, shall we? Well, in our show notes, I put this for humor's sake as, who knew that I would ever be praising Jerry Brown, the governor of California. But believe it or not, he did something that I really wasn't expecting to happen, which was he voted down State Bill 142.
That's right. He vetoed that. And this is the one that we talked about I guess it was last week.
And the week before that, the last 2 weeks.
And this is the legislation that would have made it illegal to fly drones below 350 feet over private property without the owner's permission. And a lot of organizations were kind of disappointed that this made it all the way up to the governor for his signature or veto in this case because of the negative impact on this budding UAS industry that it would have had. So this is good news.
It is. And it sheds a little bit of a light on the fact that, yes, this really was about someone's privacy. And there are laws on the books to cover someone's privacy. It wasn't really about drones. The drone was only the tool. The infraction was privacy. And Governor Brown put a veto message, which we'll have a link to the show notes. And his argument was, quote, "It could expose the occasional hobbyist and the FAA-approved commercial user alike to burdensome litigation." Well, that's kind of amazing coming from the state of California, the litigation capital of the world. But it really was unenforceable, unpractical law that just was done out of emotion, not necessarily out of necessity.
I really like the last sentence of his letter to the members of the California State Senate, where he says, just after that that text that you read, David, he says, "Before we go down that path, let's look at this more carefully." So, yeah, that's a message of reason. You know, let's look at this more carefully. Let's think about what we do and not enact some, I'll use the term knee-jerk legislation. That may be stronger than some people would like, but that's kind of what it is to my way of thinking.
Cheers to California. Hopefully the House and the Senate in California do not have the votes to override his veto, but I don't think so. So I think this is pretty much dead on sight, and let's make some practical things, or more important, enforce the privacy laws. So let's move on to some bigger news. Since you did this, Max, out on your own, you young whippersnapper going out on your own to do your own interviews, I've taught you so well. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what we're about to hear?
This is a conversation I had with Noel Bays, who's the president of the National Retail Hobby Stores Association, or NRSA. David and I have been talking about people's response to all these reports we've seen lately about people doing stupid things with their quadcopters, either violating privacy or operating them in an unsafe manner. Well, one of the things that has come up over and over again is, should dealers who sell these things have some responsibility at point of sale? So in thinking about that, I figured there must be some trade association. So I Googled it and found NRSA, called up the president, Noel Bays, and he was more than happy to have a little chat. So here's the impromptu interview I had with Noel Bays. I'm speaking with Noel Bays. He's president of the National Retail Hobby Stores Association. Noel, very pleased that you're talking with us. One of the things that we've been thinking about lately is activities of retailers with regard to drones and if there should be some kind of awareness or training or something that should happen at point of sale. So let's talk about the organization first. You're president of, and tell me how you pronounce the acronym.
We say NRSA. It's the National Retail Hobby Store Association. It is a group of independent retailers that have joined together to develop the hobby industry, to build relationships with the manufacturers, distributors, and with each other in a way that helps promote the hobby and keep that industry healthy.
And I take it that this is for brick-and-mortar hobby shops, correct? Not online businesses.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Although the two do blend together. Brick and mortar shops do have an online presence. This is for physical retailers.
Got it. And what's the size of the organization? You have an annual conference, do you?
I have a tabletop expo that is a members only in Las Vegas each year. We do cooperative benchmarking between the businesses that keeps everything proprietarily safe for the businesses, but also allows them to compare their size to other businesses and kind of get metrics back on their sales and staffing and products. So there's quite a few things that we do in the industry. One of them that is directly related to what we're discussing here is that we work closely with the Academy of Model Aeronautics, the AMA, and
sure.
They are working closely with the FAA in response to multi-rotor platforms, quadcopters, hexcopters, that we are now seeing being called drones. And unfortunately, I think that's a fear word.
I know. It does have a negative connotation for sure. Yeah, we try to work through that, but for some people, it's definitely got a negative connotation.
And in our industry, we have worked, and I think we've finally surrendered to the terminology, but we've worked for a long time.
I think so.
You know, using more accurate descriptions, because the definition of a drone is fairly open to interpretation.
Yeah, sure, sure. The association and the members certainly must have some concern over some of the uses that we see in the press for drones or typically quadcopters, but other similar devices. We see people doing unsafe things. We see crashes into sporting stadiums and all sorts of things like that. How does the association view this?
First of all, we know that any progressive technology comes with those that are not going to use it appropriately. That's not new to drones. It's just because of the fact that they are spinning fan blades open, it is getting a lot more press. And because I think really what gets the notice is that they are carrying cameras. And I think that's a huge problem. And they're, you know, because people's perception is, hey, they're watching me. And that is what has caused a lot of the problems. People want to get some really interesting views in the sky, in a stadium. Drones, quads, they really provide incredible photography. We have a number one line of defense as local stores is education. And I know that's a simple way of throwing it out there, but you may be aware of the Academy of Model Aeronautics website, Know Before You Fly.
Yes, for sure.
NERSA is definitely a supporter of that. It is absolutely critical, and I think this is where I can speak for our businesses, that we start off with educating our customers. Because we are not an online retailer that just sells an item and lets it go out the door, we do take responsibility and care for the customer and for safety. So education and safety are my top two priorities when I'm working with customers, letting them know what the regulations are, but emphasizing the safety aspect of that rather than the you can't do this or you can do this. But this is where you are able to recreationally, educationally enjoy this product.
Is it really similar to the education that that you offer to customers who are looking at, you know, traditional, I'll call it RC aircraft and things like that? Is it really the same thing?
I would say it's the same thing with a larger exclamation point.
Ah.
You can take a multi-rotor copter and at full throttle shoot straight up into the sky very rapidly. We emphasize that you're to keep your eyes on it at all times. An RC aircraft, such as an airplane, a traditional aircraft, traditionally, it's a lot more difficult for you to just full throttle and shoot that thing straight up into the sky. You are climbing to that altitude, and you are concentrating on it. They are easier to use for the beginner. That is one of the greatest appeals to them, but it also does mean that exclamation point of safety has to be emphasized more.
And so when you're talking with a customer who's looking at buying a quadcopter or something similar to that, what's the process that you go through to help them understand the importance of flying safely?
Speaking from a retail perspective, I do manage my local retail hobby store, Hobby Force. And our first thing is we ask the customer what they're looking for. Are they looking for indoor, outdoor? Are they what age group? You know, what is their goal? Is aerial photography a part of their goal, or is it just recreationally playing around and having fun? We try to feel out some of that aspect. And that's a first level for any product. You know, you're wanting to find the right mix for your customer, but that also helps inform you to assist them. Price point can, you know, is obviously a part of that as well. Once you determine they are definitely interested in moving forward, then you start to bring into keeping in mind this needs to be fairly between 100 and 400 foot. If you're in this area, outside of that, I usually reference that that's FAA territory, where small Cessnas and helicopters and life flight and other things are in that area, and you need to stay out of their way for safety. And so we kind of take it through a process, but we introduce it fairly early on, and I think that's probably the case with most stores, is they're going to introduce that, hey, let's be careful, fairly early on in the conversation.
I think that's fantastic, and I mean, that's what I was hoping to hear you say, but I didn't know if that was kind of the viewpoint that hobby shops are taking. So I think it's very encouraging to hear that, you feel part of the process of helping introduce this new technology into the hobby world and into the professional commercial world in a way that's safe.
It is an important part of the business, and this new technology is an important part of the future. And we love it. We don't want to lose the educational aspect of this new technology and the recreational part of it being an enjoyable hobby. But absolutely, you're right. We have to be on the forefront of saying, literally using their website, know before you fly. Understand what you are doing.
Right.
And hopefully we can start to see a curbing down of the ridiculousness that we've seen in the report.
All right. Well, Noel Bays, we want to thank you for giving us your comments and thoughts on this topic. I think our listeners will be encouraged that you're taking this responsibility seriously.
No, you're welcome. Thank you.
Well, David, I thought that was very encouraging. I really didn't know what I would hear. I didn't know if this trade group would come back and say, hey, after we sell it, it's up to the buyer and we're not involved. Now that's true, but I really like the way that they are taking the position that, they do have an obligation to provide some kind of an awareness level to the people who buy these things.
Agreed. And like I said earlier in the show open, I was kind of heartwarmed because I used to sell radio controlled aircraft for a living. And like everything else were model trains or model rockets, you need to have a conversation with the customer before you sell something to them. What is it they want? What is it they're looking for? And I'm glad to see that at least our brick and mortar stores are doing that with their customers. What is it you want to do with this UAV? What is it do you want to take photography? Do you want, and fitting the product to the customer so that when the customer walks out the door, they have what they want and have the capabilities that they need and not too much. And it is really good to know that, we are, as a general rule, an industry that's self-policing, especially the hobby industry. So good to them. NRSA, I used to be a member, and my hobby shop was. And
oh, did you really?
Yeah, well, it was.
So you already knew about this group?
Well, yeah. Well, it's been 20 years since I've actually operated a hobby shop.
Uh-huh.
But I used to read all of their trade publications and stuff because it was the industry I worked in. And a lot of times people would come in with the idea of a radio-controlled airplane, and a lot of times they walked out without a radio-controlled airplane because I talked them out of it. Not because I didn't want to make the sale, but it really wasn't what they wanted. Drones are one of those toys right now that everybody wants to play with. Do they want to take the time to learn how to properly operate it? They don't necessarily, they might want to operate a drone and they might want to prefer an Estes little quadcopter like I have and operate around my living room. And that will satisfy them. I'm not going to try to sell them a DJI Phantom when all they want to really do is fly it around the living room and fly it for their kids and have some fun, you know?
Right.
As much as I'd love the $1,000 sale, I'd rather have a happy customer with a $50 sale. And I think Noel was presenting that as a way of presenting that the hobby, you know, from the hobbyist standpoint. Getting the right person at the right price point with the right technology and getting them to fly safe.
Yeah, very good. And so we want to thank Noel for being so accommodating to speak with us kind of on a moment's notice or on a phone call's notice. Again, thanks to him. The hobby shop he works at is Hobby Force. He mentions that in our conversation. And that's at hobbyforce.com, a shop in Ontario, Ohio. So we'll have links to that in the show notes, as well as the National Retail Hobby Stores Association website. You can find all of that in the show notes.
And just as a quick shout out that sort of dovetails to what we were just talking about, I listened to a newer podcast this last week called The Drone Radio Show. And their episode 13 talks about standardization. And I recommend it. It's a short 22-minute podcast, kind of like ours. Really well done, and talks a little bit more about setting the stage for getting the right product to the right customer. So a shout out to that podcast. Max and I have always had the attitude with our other shows that there's more than enough content out there for any subject for to have multiple podcasts. So we're always welcoming other podcasts into the world. So just a shout out. So with that, let's talk some more news, Max. Maybe some innovation awards.
That's right. This comes from an article in Robotics Tomorrow. This is the Drone Industry Launches Technology and Innovation Awards. And these awards, I guess its complete title is the Unmanned Air Systems Technology and Innovation Awards. It's something new. It's open to any organization worldwide, actually, that is part of the unmanned aviation industry. And they're planning on giving out four awards. One is Startup of the Year. That's for the new business in the past 12 months. Another one, the second one, is the Innovation Award, and that's for an innovative new product offering. Also, the Service Solution of the Year Award, that's for some kind of a groundbreaking or important industry service. And then finally, there's the Award for Business Growth, which is awarded to the company that has substantial growth in the past year. The nominations for these, they'll be accepted up to December 20th, 2015, so you have some time. And winners will be selected by a panel of judges, and this will be announced during the SkyTech 2016 trade show, which is in London on January 27th, 2016. We'll have some links in the show notes to information about that SkyTech 2016 trade show. We're actually a media partner with them. And also we'll have a link where you can submit a nomination for the Unmanned Air Systems Technology and Innovation Awards. So
awards are always a good thing, especially if you start getting them yourselves. I mean, there has to be a World's Greatest UAV Podcast Award out there, right? Or do we have to run a contest just so we can nominate ourselves and elect ourselves with the World's Greatest Podcast Award? But that being said, awards are very valuable, and especially awards that are internal to an industry, so that it's, I was selected by my peers, to quote a very bad Academy Awards thing. So yes, it's not an honor to be nominated, but it's usually industry-wide, these kind of things. They do add some credibility to who's doing what and who to watch in the upcoming future. So we'll keep an eye on that. So the next story, I don't know how else to talk about, but it's got the greatest title. I have a new phrase that I just have to use, and unfortunately I'll end up using it in the office and I'll get fired. And that's 3D Robotics, Chris Anderson, on the rise of mass jackassery in the hobby drone community. And this was from smh.com.au. And Chris Anderson is the founder and chief executive of 3D Robotics. But I gotta love that phrase, mass jackassery. Just that's just one of those It just flows off the tongue. What do you think, Max?
It does. It does. And it also is, I think, unfortunately, an accurate kind of description for some of the behavior that we've been seeing. And of course, it concerns us. It concerns, I think, all of you listening, and it concerns guys like Chris Anderson, who is in the business, but he's also, he's also an enthusiast himself.
There seems to be a theme tonight about whose responsibility is to communicate to the hobbyist or the people who don't know, who's responsible. You know, is it the manufacturer? Is it the seller? Ultimately, it's the person operating the UAV, but is there any other fallback beyond that? So Anderson says the solution needs to come from manufacturers in the form of software-based geofencing. He also describes three areas of consumer drones. The first area was getting drones to fly. The second area was the gimbal-mounted video cameras capable of producing high-quality video. Now we are entering the third age of man, the third age of drones, which is drone autonomy that removes the need for a pilot. But that being said, you're still going to have someone who's going to have to program the drone, and they're going to be ultimately responsible.
In this third era, I think mass jackassery is more likely to proliferate because of the ease with which you can open the box, put in the batteries, and off you fly. So, that has implications for the level of the mass jackassery. But yeah, he does see it as a software. He admits that 3D Robotics, his company, is more of a software-based firm than a hardware-based firm. He contrasts that with DJI, for example, which is more of a hardware-based firm than a software-based one. So, he tends to see things as maybe as software solutions, and he views geofencing as something that, intelligent geofencing, smart geofencing, on-demand geofencing, things like that. So it'd be very interesting to watch how that kind of concept develops. And maybe, hopefully, that and other things will have an effect on the mass jackassery.
All right. Well, Max, we need to go to a video of the week. We've got two, actually, this week. The first one I saw through our Twitter feed, and I don't know why I was so mesmerized by this, but it is the spring barley harvest in Kildare, Ireland. And it's really just video of farm tractors harvesting wheat, but there's something really just simply elegant about it. And I watched the whole video in the office and was, I guess I'm mesmerized by machines. And machines doing things purposefully. My family's always been about airplanes and trains and cars and that kind of stuff. And this is just a really good video of high def of farm machines doing their job, but doing it really neat, So that was my choice for the video of the week. How about yours?
Well, we had a listener, Guillermo, from Valencia, Spain, write in, and he was part of the first class of a drone pilot course put on by the Polytechnic University of Valencia. And it's a course that offers both theory and practice. It's kind of an exciting thing. It's 320 hours. It's a significant course. So he sent us some links we'll put in the show notes. We have a video that he took of the students working on an ABOT X6 copter. Also, he's got some, we'll have some links to the information about the course. They were featured on a couple of news programs in Spain, and that's, very, very exciting. And so we'll put links to all of those in the show notes, including a class photo that we have of all of the students. And let me tell you, they've all got big smiles on their faces, David.
It really was a lovely email from Guillermo. And one of the things that we've always prided ourselves, he commented that he liked our English. We're easy to understand, though Max and I question that. But yeah. We also know that there's been a lot of people across the world have listened to Airplane Geeks to practice their English, because English is the language of flight. So thank you, Guillermo, for taking the time and sending out the video, and keep in touch. We'd like to know what happens now that you've graduated.
For sure.
And speaking of people who we followed since she started taking flight and now she's graduated and moving on to bigger and better things, and that's our friend Jody, who is now a professional helicopter pilot. And she wrote quickly, "I can speak as an expert on avoiding birds. I fly among them all the time and have hit a few." Now, she starts comparing drones to birds. "Most birds are under 10 pounds, likely only a few pounds or a few ounces. Birds are predictable. They tend to execute the same avoidance or territory maneuver every time. Birds are made of meat, and meat will absorb the force of impact. Birds are often smaller than a 2-foot wingspan. Potential damage from a bird often does not cause an airplane to lose basic aerodynamic principles," i.e. Captain Scully was able to fly his Airbus into the Hudson River. "The UAVs I've seen would likely cause catastrophic damage, being unrecoverable." So she's a bit concerned, and I don't blame her for this. I wrote back to Jody and said, yeah, you all, given she flies in California, and given the up until last night or this morning, she was going to be flying basically in the same zone that all of the other drones will be flying, which is between 350 and 400 feet. She flies slightly above that, but helicopters fly a lot lower than normal airplanes, given what the nature of what they do. So I said, yeah, you're probably right, but we'd like to thank Jody for sending that in and giving us a little more feedback from a pilot standpoint on birds over UAVs.
We also heard from Andy. He sent us an email about the Volocopter, and I think we talked about that. This is it's a big multicopter, a big, big multicopter that's so big that it's actually will take human passengers. But what Andy found was kind of a home-built version of this. This is some guy who, he built this multi-rotor with 54 propellers. And he sent us a video of this. The guy gets off the ground. He doesn't get a whole lot of altitude, but I don't know. It looks kind of crazy to me. We'll also put some links in the show notes of besides that and the Volocopter. We also have one of the prototype of the Volocopter, and we'll put that in the show notes also.
Yeah, that's one of those ones that you sort of scratch your head and go, okay. And the other part we want to mention is, Andy, we are looking for someone to talk about UAV insurance. My problem with that is that I have to run out of the building and hide.
conflict of interest?
Just because I can't really talk about it because I have licenses in insurance. But we're going to talk about it, and maybe I'll recuse myself that episode or whatever. But we definitely want somebody in the industry of insurance to talk about insuring our 333 properly flying commercial people, you know, and getting the right insurance. Because as an licensed insurance agent, I always want my clients to have the insurance to cover everything they do, especially when they're flying with things that can destroy buildings and take out people, et cetera. So we are working on that. So we also got one from Ryan. And you got to love, Max, a email that starts off with UAV Digest dudes, exclamation point. He just purchased a Phantom 3 Pro, and he discovered our podcast, and he's just learning to fly and learning to listen to the podcast. And he thought that was great. And Ryan, cheers. Good luck with flying the Phantom. Max and I are not the best people to talk to about flying small UAVs. We tend to just crash them, but good luck with that. And keep us posted on how it's going, and maybe send us some video once you got it up and flying so we can see you flying around. So, but I guess with that, Max, we're running a bit long, aren't we?
Yeah, I think it's time to draw this to a close. We want to thank you for listening to episode 112 of the UAV Digest. Find us at theuavdigest.com. Show notes are at theuavdigest.com/112.
And quickly, I'd like to give a shout out to our friends at Go Engineer, who tonight sent us a lovely poster showing that we are represented out at InterDrone Expo. And we'd like our listeners to definitely visit the link to our show notes and visit Go Engineer. Ken, we owe you. It's really cool knowing that we have a presence out there, even though Max and I couldn't make it this year. But there's always next year, and we're getting excited. But if you'd also like to find us on, not necessarily at a convention, but online, you can find us at the UAV Digest on Twitter or facebook.com/theUAVDigest. The email address is feedback@theUAVDigest.com. So continue sending us our videos of the week. Any news stories you might want, don't hesitate thinking that we probably got it, because even if we get it 7 times, it really means it's something we need to be talking about on the show. And of course, if you're on Stitcher or iTunes, the best thing you can do is leave us a review. That way other people can find us online. And the other two ways is you can purchase some merch from our Cafe Press store, or you can always sponsor the show by becoming a patron of the show. We'd like to thank all of our patrons for all of the monetary help they've given us. It's one way that we can go do this convention in 2 weeks that Max and I are so excited about, being able to talk to people in the industry. So with that, I would say I better get off because I just saw some lightning. So with that, it's David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.